You are listening to the Signature Books podcast. Signature Books is a proud member of the Dialogue Podcast Network. You can support this podcast and others in our network by subscribing at dialoguejournal.com.
Welcome to the Signature Books podcast. I am Devery Anderson, and I'm the marketing manager here at Signature Books. And today I'm joined by Signature Director Barbara Jones Brown and also our marketing specialist Beth Brimmer Reeve. So welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Devery.
Thanks. All right. For this podcast today.
All right. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. We are excited about our lineup for 2024, and we are going to talk about the books that we're going to publish this winter and this spring. And it's a great lineup, and we're excited to talk about it. And so you can see these books as well on our website if you go to signaturebooks.com to learn a little bit more. But we're going to talk about each one of them and what they contribute to Signature Books. And the first books that are coming out this year that are at press, and you'll see later this month and next month, are two books of poetry, one by Maureen Clark. And she's new to Signature. First time we're publishing her, so we're excited to have her. Her book is called This Insatiable August. And another is called Count Me In by Darlene Young. Now, these two join our tradition of publishing poetry through Signature Books. But each poet is different. Their poems are unique. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about what these two books bring to Signature and a little bit about the style of the authors and maybe how they're different. And Beth, I know you spent some time with the authors as well. So what can you tell us about, let's start with Insatiable August, Maureen's book, and what you thought about that book.
Well, sure, Devery. I think what I want to just say right off the bat is both of these women bring a rich voice to our collection of poetry. And something that I'm really excited about that we're doing at Signature is we're pulling in more women's voices. And Audre Lorde spoke about this in an essay that she wrote about how for women, then poetry is not a luxury. And she said it is a vital necessity of our existence. It forms the quality of the light within which we predicate our hopes and dreams towards survival and change, first made into language, then into idea, and then into more tangible action. And I love both of these collections, and I think I'll speak just to both of them and tell you a little bit about how they're similar and how they're different. Both of these women have written poetry for years. This is Darlene. Darlene has actually written a few other collections. And they're speaking to women and, well, to anyone really who is inside the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or outside of the church. And the umbrella is big enough for everyone. And they both have a lot of life under their belt, and they have a lot of life experience under their belt. And so there's some reminiscing in the poetry. There's some humor in the poetry. There's loss. There's grief. And both poets in the collections that I've written really are great at being very concrete in their words and in their word choice. And it just will draw readers in, and the people who love poetry like I do, with their vulnerability and the way that they're approaching life. And so I think one way that they're similar is that they're both speaking to their own personal life experiences, going through grief and loss. And yet there's also a lot of humor in the poetry, and there's just, I think there's a lot of things that are relatable to everyone in any stage of life. Poetry is a way that we help give name to the nameless so it can be thought. And the farthest external horizons of our hopes and fears are cobbled by our poems. And I think both of these collections really, really speak to that. Poetry is a bridge, and it's a way to look at life in a new way of kind of bringing hope to situations. And so I'm just really happy that we're that we're doing this. And also, I just want to mention that we're having our poetry night on April 16th here at Signature Offices with, in collaboration with the King's English Bookshop. Darlene and Maureen will both be on hand. Also, Lisa Bickmore, the Utah State Poet Laureate, will be on hand. And we'll have other poets as well speaking. And so I hope everyone will mark that on their calendars and join us for that event.
All right. Yes, that will be a great event. And if you attended our poetry night this last year, you remember how great that night was and the excitement of all the poets we had here reading from their works. And so, yes, Darlene and Maureen are both new to Signature, and we're excited about this. And sounds like they offer just as much, their poetry offers just as much insight and creativity and thoughtfulness as anything we've published. And so they're great to continue on that tradition for us. We're also publishing very shortly an anthology on Nauvoo polygamy. The book is edited by Cheryl Bruno, and it's called Secret Covenants, New Insights on Early Mormon Polygamy. And of course, this covers the Nauvoo period, and that's always been a fascinating period. There have been books on it. We have a book by George Smith called Nauvoo Polygamy, and we've published other works on polygamy, Richard Van Wagner's overview of Mormon polygamy. But there's always new stuff to learn, new research, new documents to be examined for the first time that just sheds light on this period. And as I mentioned, it's edited by Cheryl Bruno, and the authors here that are part of that are Claire Barris, Mark Tensmeyer, Christopher C. Smith, Don Bradley, Susan Staker, John Dinger, Todd Compton, Marianne Clements. I have one in there, Devery Anderson, and there's also one by, and that one's by Cheryl Bruno, and then there's also one by William Victor Smith. So we have 12 essays, all shedding light, further light on Nauvoo polygamy. I can speak to mine a little, which I'm excited about because I'm working on a biography of Willard Richards that I started years ago. And the Joseph Smith papers have really helped with that book. And it's taken me a while to write it, but it's a good thing because I now have access to those papers, which will make the book even better. And I'll be finishing it within the next few months. And so I'm excited about that. But Willard Richards' polygamy was a little bit different. I have the name of my article is Willard Richards' Nauvoo Plural Marriages, Polygamy Most Peculiar. And he was one of the few, in fact, the only one I could really find that married polyandrously, as Joseph Smith did on several of his marriages. And as we know, or if we need to define that, this is a case where a woman has multiple husbands. And I found that he was one who did that and had a few very unusual marriages. He married a niece, his sister's daughter, and he also married one woman, Alice Longstroth, without even an officiator. He mentioned in his journal that they took each other by the hand, declared each other husband and wife, and that was their sealing ceremony. It didn't last. She went on to marry someone else, but it was an unusual marriage just by how it was performed and how it came about. Not to say that Nauvoo plural marriage wasn't unusual to begin with. So this is unusual for Nauvoo standards. So I'm excited about the article because it does shed a lot of light on him. Found items from his journal and other records that just helped me write about him. And all these articles are just very unique. They've all been published they're being published for the first time now. So this isn't a collection of previously published material, but all new. And so these are fresh articles and people are excited about it. I've gotten a lot of comments from people asking when it's coming, and it's coming this spring. And so excited. Any other comments or thoughts on that?
Well, as I was just going to say, as a descendant of Willard Richards, I'm really interested in what you found out, Devery, and looking forward to read it. Not thrilled to find out he was sealed to his niece. Was it his biological niece or a?
Yes. Yes. So his sister became his mother-in-law. So,
wow. Okay. That's wild. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to reading it. Or not.
Looking forward to reading it, but you may not be glad you did.
Yeah.
All right. And so we also are excited to publish a biography of Marion D. Hanks, who's a beloved church leader, member of the Quorum of 70. And this is biography is written by his son, Rich Hanks. And it's really going to be great. I don't think we've published anything like this before. Of course, we've done biographies of church leaders, rarely this contemporary, and I don't think ever by a relative or by a son in this case. And I know, Barbara, you've been working on that one, working with the author. So do you have some insights or some things you'd like to share about this book?
Sure. Yeah, I am so excited about this book. It is the first biography written of Marion D. Hanks, even though Hanks, who served as a general authority for nearly 40 years, was hugely influential in the 20th century church. It's kind of stunning that there hasn't been a biography of him yet. So Rich Hanks, his son, has written this biography and asked me to edit it for Signature. And so I've been going through it. It's a really exciting work. Talk about new insights into 20th century Mormon history. It will discuss how he influenced the church and how he influenced the direction that the church took. So I think readers are really going to be interested in this. For anyone who's my age or younger, in our 50s or younger, we will remember the huge influence Hanks had. And he was a very popular speaker in the church, hugely influential. Even though he was never called as an apostle, his influence was phenomenal. So I think this is going to be an important work and add greatly to Mormon studies, particularly of the 20th century.
And the title of this one is To Be a Friend of Christ, The Life of Marion D. Hanks. And that title really speaks to the kind of person he was. He was known as being very charitable and Christ-like. And so to refer to him as a friend of Christ seems to tell me that he was trying to emulate Christ. Yeah,
absolutely. And as an example of what we'll learn from this, Hanks was known as being, like you say, Debbie, extremely Christ-like and extremely charitable, particularly for the poor, the disenfranchised, the suffering. And what I did not know, but now I do know, is he grew up poor. His father died when he was only two. And so he and his family, growing up during the Great Depression, he really had to scrap to make a living and grew up in poverty. He literally supported his family by having a paper out, things like that, worked all through college to get himself through. And I, for the first time, understood, oh, this is why he was so caring about the poor and the disenfranchised. So just all kinds of insights like that, that I think readers will gain.
All right. Yes. And I know we're all looking forward to this one. I certainly am. Right. Another book coming out this spring is edited by Carrie Spencer Prey, and it's called The Book of Queer Mormon Joy. This is also an anthology. There are several essays in this book, all talking about, as the title explains, being queer, LDS, at least having an LDS connection, and being able to live a life of joy as a queer Mormon or ex-Mormon or having some affiliation or having had. And there's several essays, and I believe these are, correct me if I'm wrong, are these all being published now for the first time in this volume?
Yes, these are all original essays.
All right. And there are several. I know that the book is divided into different sections with joy in the title of each section. Joy as complicated, joy as defiance and faith, joy as gratitude for home. And I believe those are the three sections. And under each one, there are several. I'm looking at least 10 to 15 essays in each section, and all speaking to joy. And so it sounds like a very positive book, and one that I think people just need to read to gain a much greater understanding of what it is to be queer, the struggles, but also the joy in accepting who you are, not in some way of just learning to live with yourself, but actually learning to find joy in who you are. And I think that's what people need to understand. And that's what that's the message that comes out in this book.
Yeah. So the editor of the book is Carrie Spencer Prey, who identifies as a lesbian post-Mormon. She has compiled the essays, reaching out to all kinds of folks, posted something on her website, looking for essays. So we have an incredible range of folks from across the LGBTQ spectrum, across the racial spectrum, across the spectrum of nationality, giving a wide view of their personal experiences. So just a few folks that come to mind are Stacey Harkey, formerly of Studio C at BYU, Eli McCann, who is a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, and so funny, just such a great sense of humor. Lori Lee Hall, a trans woman who was a state president when she transitioned, and she was also a chief architect of temples for the LDS Church when she transitioned. She'll be sharing her story in an essay, and maybe I'll just jump ahead a little bit and mention that we will also be publishing Lori Lee's memoir in the fall this year. So just a wide variety of fantastic essays from a variety of folks and sharing their experiences of finding joy, like you said, Debrie. And we're also super excited to have Carolyn Pearson, who has written the foreword for the book, and Bob Reese, who is also a longtime ally of the queer Mormon community, has written an introduction for the book. So it's going to be fantastic. And I hope everyone will look forward to reading it, whether they're a member of the LGBTQ community or a family member or someone who just wants to learn more about what it is to be queer and Mormon or post-Mormon.
All right. And yes, many people are looking forward to this one. Just some of the comments we're seeing online and that I've received, people asking, when is this coming? And so just a few months coming away. So you can look forward to that. All right. And we also have another anthology coming, which is Writing Mormon History 2, Authors' Stories Behind Their Works. And this is edited by Joseph Geisner. And if you recall the first one, Writing Mormon History, what these volumes are, they're stories by authors who've written books or important articles on Mormon history, and they are telling the backstory to what it took to write the book, what their experience was, or the article. And people who read books, you obviously see, especially in scholarly works, there are footnotes, endnotes explaining the sources and sometimes explaining the citation further, what was said in a paragraph in a book. It needs a lot of explanation. You'll see these things in the footnotes. All these things tell a reader that a lot of work went into this, that there was sometimes comparing of sources, digging for sources, having to interview people, all of that stuff. There's a lot of work that goes into research and writing, and every author has a story to tell. And that's what this book continues, is writing those backstories to give readers an appreciation of the blood, sweat, and tears that go into publishing any scholarly work, any work really at all. And I think, Barbara, you've been able to look through some of these, or you can tell us a little bit about some of the authors involved here.
Yeah, just to speak to what you're saying, Devery, I realized when recently we lost Linda King Newell, passed away, who wrote, of course, Mormon Enigma, the first biography of Emma Smith. And we had her essay in Writing Mormon History, the first volume, and telling her story. That's when it really hit home to me how important these volumes are, so that we have authors, the backstories behind the writing of their works, because we won't always have them, won't always be here. And so this book will, like the first one, be tremendously important. So just to mention some of the authors, Gary Bergera, Matt Bowman, myself, talking about the Mountain Meadows Massacre Project, Alice Faulkner Burke, who just recently published My Lord, He Calls Me, a collection of Black Latter-day Saints oral histories published by Deseret Books. She's telling the story behind that book. Jill Mulvey-Durr, who wrote Women of Covenant and was a longtime employee of both historian for both BYU and the Church History Department. Rick Grunder, P. Jane Hafen, and Brendan Rensink, who compiled an anthology titled Essays on American Indian and Mormon History. Hugely important book. So the list goes on and on. Bill Moran, who is a historian with the Community of Christ. So that's just to name about half of the folks. There's many more. And so I think it just shows you the broad range of authors that we have talking about their broad range of works in Mormon studies. So this will be a great book for anyone who either writes Mormon history or does Mormon studies themselves, or people who just want to learn more about the authors and the stories behind how these works came to light.
All right. And thanks for that. And Beth, you do our social media. If any of you see our posts on Instagram, Facebook, X, any of those are coming from Beth. And so you've had a chance to post about our books. Do you have a sense of what books people are getting excited about? Do you see some comments on these social media posts? And have you been able to get people just, you're the one that's kind of getting it from on a day-to-day basis. I send out emailers when we have a new release and that.
Yes.
But you're able to keep our readers excited. Do you have some comments about what's coming or what your experience has been promoting?
The book of Queer Mormon Joy is getting a lot of attention. And I think we're all really excited about that because it's kind of taking us in a new direction with some of the books that we're doing at Signature. And I know we're trying to include more voices in, you know, who people are hearing from. And in talking to the bookstores, a lot of people want to do signings around that book in the month of June when it comes out. And so we're really excited to be a part of that. I know Chosen Path, even though we haven't really talked about that, but Chosen Path has gotten a lot of feedback and we're seeing a lot of positive reviews come in for that.
Chosen Path being the new memoir of D. Michael Quinn.
And I know that on Latter Gay Stories, they will be posting a podcast. Mormon Stories will be posting a podcast. And I think the listeners will be, I think our audience will be very interested to hear what Moshe Quinn and Barbara have to say, kind of the backstory of the book and how it came into being. I mean, I think all of our books are exciting. I think there's a lot, and Barbara probably sees a lot of it too, because she's on social media a lot too.
Yeah, I was just going to also add that we will also be on the Salt Lake Tribune's Mormonland.
Okay.
We'll be interviewing tomorrow with Peggy Fletcher Stack and David Noyce for that.
Great.
So yeah, I hope people will look for these and mostly be able to hear Michael's son, Moshe, speak. And of course, at our events, his daughters have also been participating, Mary Quinn and Lisa Harrison as well. So, yeah.
And we're still seeing really positive reviews come in for the September 6th by Dr. Sarah Patterson. I just think the books that we're putting out, I'm just really proud of and proud to be part of marketing and putting them out into the world and giving what I say, giving voice to people who maybe have been marginalized in the past and who have been sidelined. And so I think that's a really important part of what we do at Signature.
All right. And that kind of leads into this final book for the winter and spring that we'll be talking about. And it's interesting how the connectedness between these some of these volumes we've just talked about. When we talk about mid to late 20th century Mormonism, the September 6th book, of course, dealt with the September 6th were from the, you know, those events that excommunicated and disciplined people in 1993, that period. But it also speaks about just what allowed those things to happen, just the culture that had been created within Mormonism that became very anti-intellectual, anti-feminist, anti-gay, really, and how all of that kind of connects. And Michael Quinn, of course, was one of the people who was disciplined in 1993. His memoir speaks to that. It also speaks to his mission president, who was Marion D. Hanks. Marion D. Hanks was a good friend of Bruce R. McConkie. And so we're getting a lot of 20th century Mormonism, mid to late 20th century, which I think has been a period that hasn't been discussed as much. And we're creating a lot of sources when people want to write about 20th century, the history of Mormonism from World War II on to the end of the century. We're creating some great sources for people to continue that, to be able to understand Mormonism better. Bruce R. McConkie, as I mentioned, I have a book coming out on him. It's called Bruce R. McConkie, Apostle and Polemicist. And this is part of our brief biography series. We've got, I think this will be the seventh one published, and there are others that will be coming as well. But mine's the next one to come, and it'll be coming out in the late spring. And Bruce R. McConkie and Marion D. Hanks both served in the Quorum of 70 together. They became very good friends, but they were, you couldn't find anybody more different from each other in their views and just in their personalities, I think. But
friends with conflicts too, right? Sorry,
Derek. Yeah, exactly.
Friends, you know, they respected each other, but also had very there was conflict there.
So yeah,
interesting. Coincidentally, to have these two biographies coming out about the same time.
Yes, and I interviewed Rich Hanks for the book because of the friendship that Bruce R. and Marion D. had. And one of the things he told me was that his father said that if there was a better man that ever lived than Bruce R. McConkie, I've yet to meet him. Mm-hmm. Yet they had these conflicts and they didn't see eye to eye on a lot. And he wasn't afraid to tell Elder McConkie where he thought he had spoken out of line or out of place, especially how firm he was in his own views. McConkie, he would teach his own personal views as doctrine. You couldn't really separate. If you were listened or read Bruce R. McConkie, you didn't know when he was speaking his opinion as opposed to church doctrine. I don't even think he really knew until he was called on the carpet, and then he would understand that, oh, yes, I shouldn't have said that. But it was his nature to just push that as far as he could. And if nobody said anything, then he would just keep going.
And I think the book you're referring to, Devery, of course, is Mormon Doctrine, which was written.
Right. Yeah. Mormon Doctrine was written and published in 1958. There was controversy over that, which I discuss. I'm not the first one to discuss this, but I think I include more detail than you typically see. And it's all reserved for a chapter. And then there was a book prior to that called Sound Doctrine that he tried to publish, and J. Reuben Clark intervened and made sure that one didn't get published. It was going to be a multi-volume work, taking the best sermons from the Journal of Discourses, and he envisioned, I think it was a 10-volume work, kind of the Journal of Discourses' greatest hits is maybe the best way to put it. And but the brethren were very concerned about that. This is before the Journal of Discourses had been reprinted like we see now. But back then, it was just it existed in its original form. So not too many people had read those discourses. And they were upset with him because he didn't clear it with them first. But they thought that it would be unwise to publish that because they thought, well, if he's going to publish the best from that, then the stuff that isn't included, people are going to become curious about. And there was some stuff like Adam God doctrine and just other teachings that wound up in the Journal of Discourses that they didn't want to draw attention to the stuff he left out. And I know Elder Clark also said the title of the book, Sound Doctrine, makes it sound like there's other doctrine out there that's unsound. And so they didn't let him publish it. But then 20 years later, he had his son publish that first volume. He just took his manuscript, basically, and Joseph Fielding McConkie published it under the title Journal of Discourses Digest. And he envisioned a multi-volume work, too, but it never went past that first volume. So McConkie still got it out there while he was living, but he had his son do it. So And there's also other controversies. There have been other volumes, other biographies of of Bruce R. McConkie, but they're both very devotional. His son, Joseph Fielding McConkie, wrote one called The Bruce R. McConkie Story, Reflections of a Son. And Eborn Books published one also by Dennis Horn, Bruce R. McConkie, Highlights of His Life and Teachings. And very, very devotional. And that's fine. I think my book is very balanced. I talk about his devotion to the church, his some of his experiences that gave him his faith. He never wavered for a second about anything. And that really comes out. But yeah, he was also one who, of course, loved his family, had a great sense of humor. You wouldn't know it when he spoke over the pulpit. And he even said this. He said, when I'm speaking, very serious, very focused, very stern. But when he wasn't at the pulpit, he was the neighborhood party man. He would arrange parties. He had a very good sense of humor. And when I was on my mission, I absolutely worshiped Bruce R. McConkie. Our mission president had us read The Promised Messiah, the first in his 6-volume series on the life of Christ, life and mission of Christ. I fell in love with that book. I read them all. I was on my mission. I was always talking to people about these and telling people, you've got to read this. President Jones told us we should read it. And then later, as I saw him kind of going after people and sometimes publicly embarrassing people that he disagreed with, kind of didn't like him so much. And then, of course, some of his doctrines and views, I just thought, oh, I can't ever accept this. Researching and writing this book, I learned to like him better than I had in recent years. I don't have the same view of him as I did on my mission, but I certainly like him better than I did in the years after my mission. So I think the book comes out showing I think it's balanced. I don't shy away from the controversies, but I don't shy away from, you know, what made him a person of faith and what made other people like him a lot. So I think it'll be good. And it contributes to this series, as I mentioned. And so you can read it in a couple of days, depending on how fast you read. But I think you get a really good overview of McConkie, and probably more detail than the other biographies do, because they highlight his teaching so much. I do that as well, but I'm really focusing on his life more and his public life especially. And so I'm looking forward to it. I hope people like it. So Marion D. Hanks comes out in my book some. D. Michael Quinn even gets mentioned, because it's interesting when Elder McConkie was called to be an apostle, he was asked to be one of his first assignments was to be an advisor to Leonard Arrington's church history division. And Mike Quinn wrote in his journal, I just learned today that Howard W. Hunter and Bruce R. McConkie are going to be advising us. And he said, I can't think of two worst choices. I've always heard these two men have dark age views on Mormon history. But then Quinn said, I don't want to be rebellious, so I just want to do the Lord's will. But it turned out McConkie was a very positive influence, or he was very supportive of Arrington and his team. And that comes out in Arrington's diaries. And so I think some people will be surprised that Elder McConkie was for the writing of church history in the way it should be written, at least what he told them, but he still had his limits. There's also the story about when he read Lester Bush's article from Dialogue on race, on the history of the black policy, that Ed Ashman walked in his office just as McConkie was reading it. Ed Ashman, he worked for the church translation department back then. He's written a few things on the Book of Abraham as well, and that's how we kind of know him in the Mormon studies community. But he walked in McConkie's office just as McConkie was reading the book, or reading that article, and he witnessed him turn around in his chair and slam it on his desk and call it crap very loud. And so that gives the impression that he wouldn't have been supportive all that much to the writing of church history, but he was supportive of Arrington when Elder Packer tried to stop some publications that they wanted to do. And McConkie told Leonard Arrington, don't let him, don't let him brainwash you, or something like that. It said, just do your own thing and don't listen to Elder Packer. So McConkie was much more supportive than I think most people would think with the history department. But at the same time, he was a committee member on the scripture committee, which came out with the new editions of the Bible and the triple combination in 79 and 81, respectively. And he wrote all of those chapter headings for each verse or each chapter in all of the scriptures. So he was kept pretty busy. And you can see in the Bible dictionary how influential he was. They used his book, Mormon Doctrine, a lot in the Bible dictionary. And that came about as part of the new scripture. So his hand was in everything. And we still feel his influence a lot today because of how he influenced the preparation of these new volumes of scripture. And another thing that comes out in the book is that he came out with his own edition of the Pearl of Great Price that he tried to push in 1980. He had it typeset and everything, and it's much expanded from the Pearl of Great Price we have today. He even wanted to canonize the Wentworth letter, put it in verse form, all the way from beginning to end.
Maybe explain what the Pearl of Great Price is and what the Wentworth letter is.
Well, the Pearl of Great Price is one of the four books of scripture that the LDS Church uses as part of its standard works. And the Pearl of Great Price currently has the Book of Moses, the Book of Abraham, some writings of Joseph Smith on his history, and also the 12 articles or 13 articles of faith. 13, yeah. Articles of faith that were canonized. And those articles of faith come from the Wentworth letter. Well, he expanded the articles of faith to 15 in the volume he wanted to publish, expanded the Book of Moses several more chapters, and some other books and writings from Joseph Smith's translation of the Bible. The translation of the Bible was something, a project Joseph Smith did in the 1830s. To what's called the inspired version, where it's believed that he just corrected stuff from the Bible, various verses or added stuff to the Bible, which he believed would have been how the Bible should have come out originally. And the church never canonized that. The Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the now called the Community of Christ, has always had access to that. They had the inspired version that they were able to publish and use. But the LDS Church never did, so McConkie really loved the inspired version. And so he took much of that to expand the Pearl of Great Price. And the church didn't accept his new version of the Pearl of Great Price. They wouldn't canonize it, although they did take several excerpts from the inspired version and include it in the section that provides excerpts, but it's not part of the official canon. But he really pushed for it. He pushed for this Pearl of Great Price, which I have a copy of, and talk about it a lot in the book. And so I was able to discuss stuff like this that you don't really hear about, or if you do, it's kind of downplayed in the other books. And then his involvement in the 1978 revelation on priesthood, when people of African descent men were able to be ordained to the priesthood after 1978, and men and women were able to go to the temple and receive temple ordinances. His role in that, and of course, his teachings prior to and after are all discussed as well. And so excited about this book. And as you can tell, I might be a little biased because I think I spent more time talking about this one than the others. Not that mine's better, just that it's the one I know the best. So I had my hand in it from beginning to end. And so those seven volumes, two books of poetry again, Maureen Clark's This Insatiable August, Darlene Young, Count Me In, Cheryl Bruno, New Insights in Early Mormon Polygamy, Richard Hanks, To Be a Friend of Christ, The Life of Marion D. Hanks, Carrie Spencer Prey, editor of the anthology, The Book of Queer Mormon Joy, Joe Geisner, editor of Writing Mormon History 2, authors' stories behind their works, and of course, Devery Anderson, me, Bruce R. McConkie, apostle and polemicist. And as we mentioned, D. Michael Quinn's Chosen Path has just come out, and that one. We've had some signings and podcasts, so you'll be able to go online and hear a lot of this signings that were that was recorded at Benchmark Books will be online, and also Mormon Land coming up that you'll be able to listen to, and a Mormon Stories episode as well. And what was the other, what were the other podcasts?
Letter Gay Stories will be. Yeah,
that just dropped right now, even as we're recording.
So, okay. Yeah. And by the time this airs, of course, these should all be available. And so that's going to be great. So it's a great way to start your year off with a book that just came out that is available, Chosen Path, D. Michael Quinn. Any other thoughts on our lineup for winter and spring 2024 from either one of you?
I just want to say that we're going to have some events coming up, the poetry event in April 16th. And then when the Book of Queer Mormon Joy comes out, we'll be having events in June. And also when your book comes out in July, and we'll have the Marion D. Hanks book, and your book will do something with you. And so if people will watch for that in our newsletters and on social media and join us at those events, that will be another way that we can learn about these people that we're excited about learning about.
All right. And it's exciting to talk about these books, knowing that this is only the first half of the year. We'll be back to talk about what else is going to come up in the second half of 2024. So keep in mind, this is the first half of the year for us, and this is some very great stuff that we're excited about. All right. Well, thank you both for joining me today as we discussed our catalog at Signature Books. And we will joyously watch these things come out and have these signings and make our readers happy. And we'll talk again, perhaps in July, as we discuss the second half of the year. All right.
Great. Thanks, Deborah.
Right. Have a great day to you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.